streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome in. It's the Lions 24/7 podcast coming to you on a Saturday. It's not a post-game podcast. I want to stress before we get going here, what we witnessed in Beaver Stadium was not a game format. It was a practice, but we did see probably more scrimmage action than we thought, about an hour's worth of scrimmage action. Sean Fitz and I were sitting alongside each other and plenty of our colleagues in the press box. An announced attendance of about 7,500 folks in Beaver Stadium, first-year students, family, friends, guests of players and staff and other people from this university. So, look, baby steps moving forward. I know that Coach Franklin and that several players expressed their excitement about playing in front of a group of people in the stadium, something they didn't really get to do a chance last year. And we talked about before, first time there's been some outside eyeballs on this team in quite some time. We're going to break it down. Before we get going, Sean, I'll let our listeners know there was a lot going on. There wasn't a replay board. There wasn't any kind of stat tracker. We don't have stats coming out of this thing. You were focused in on the defensive personnel. I was focused in on the offensive personnel. Of course, we were watching the action along the way, but we kind of had to like take what we could get from the situation because, again, there wasn't a replay situation and we weren't, you know, looking at updated tracker of how things were going.
It was fun. I mean, just to be in there, just to see everything happen and getting people around. I know there was a time midway through where they started doing some special teams and Devin Ford took a kickoff 98 yards to the house or something. It clearly was not a live drill. I don't know if they had planned to do the taking all the way back, but just hearing the elevation of noise from the crowd, the building of excitement, it just kind of, you know, oh, and then boom, he breaks it. And that's just cool. I mean, it's the little things, you know, you missed that kind of stuff. So it was cool taking what we can get. And I do think it's important that we talk about that format. The format was a modified scrimmage. They came out, they did some warm-up drills, some 7-on-7 drills, some position drills, some one-on-ones with the offensive line, you know, just kind of team period type stuff. And they went back in the locker room. They did some crowd teaching to the first year students, you know, the cheers and the blue band and all that kind of stuff, which is great. But then the scrimmage came out, it started about 1 o'clock and it ran to about 2:30. I mean, they got a lot of scrimmage work in today, which, you know, I thought it was a better, more aesthetically pleasing from what we do sort of thing than the blue white game. You know, the blue white game is kind of over by halftime. And by the end it's walk-ons playing against walk-ons. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it was more ones versus ones. We saw a lot of first team action today and we're an hour and 15 minutes in, they bring the first team back out and do red zone work. So it was pretty cool from that aspect. So we got a lot of look, maybe a better look at some of the guys higher on the depth chart and maybe some new guys that are higher in the depth chart than we probably thought we were going to get. But it was a pretty cool experience.
There were some players missing on the field. We'll get to that as we kind of run down the positions and defense, offense, and all that. Again, this is one of 15 practices in the spring. It's our glimpse inside of it. You want to be careful not to go too far down the path of gleaning everything from this one look. And you also want to go too far down that path of theorizing why a guy wasn't on the field today. It could be something as simple as an ankle that was rolled this week. It could be anything. But there were a few notable players missing. But let's talk about, Sean, who was out there. A lot of focus is going to be on Sean Clifford, the offense, working with Mike Yurcich for the first time in front of us. Defensively, we saw a lot of personnel involved as well. So where do we want to start here? I mean, I think probably let's go with the fact that offensively, it wasn't a thing of beauty. It wasn't a perfect scenario, but it was work that they weren't getting last spring with the first-year offensive coordinator. There's a lot of ground to make up, I think, across the board, and you really start at the quarterback room there.
Well, you think that a lot of that focus this spring has been on the installation of the offense, and Sean Clifford, who I was in the room with after the Zoom room with after the scrimmage, really harped on every day they're putting new things in. Every day they're just kind of, Mike Yurcich is throwing a lot at them. So, you know, kind of reflected this offense as a whole, kind of reflected that. You know, they struggled to move the ball at times. Other times it was frankly okay, but it's very much a work in progress on the offensive side of the ball. It's going to start with the quarterbacks. I mean, you've got, you know, Clifford was out there. I think you did the breakdown for drives, right?
Yeah. So there was a couple scenarios where, like, there was one series where the first play, Taquan Robertson and Devin Ford had an issue with an exchange on a handoff, and there was a fumble and they lost possession and defense got it, but he stayed on the field. So that counts as one possession. But I what my final tally was, I think I had Sean Clifford with handling seven possessions, Taquan Robertson handling seven. And then I believe the number was three for Christian Veyer. Got a little difficult to count because towards the end, it was more about situational things, red zone setups. And a reminder, this is not a, we talked about Devin Ford returning to kickoff, but it wasn't like you take the ball and you end up at your own 20. They were putting the ball at the 45 to start certain possessions, at that 20 yard line to start certain possessions. So it was kind of a mixed thing, but I would say we saw 50% Sean Clifford, 40% Taquan Robertson, and maybe 10% Christian Veyer by the end of the day.
And you also forgot my guy Mason Stahl again, like you do.
Shoot. Okay, hold on. Let me get that again. 48% Sean Clifford. Let's go with 40% of Taquan Robertson, 9% Christian Veyer, and 3% of Mason Stahl. And if that adds up to 100, I am way ahead of my math than where I think I am.
I didn't even track it, so I think you're good. But yeah, that's the way it goes. Defense, I think they handled things up front. This is just a general feeling here, and I think we'll get to some of the reasons why. But first, let's talk about the MVPs. I mean, this is the blue-white game. This is what we do. We try to take individual performances and prop them up a little bit. Hey, man, Kalen King. Are we ready to say real deal? He's got my seal of approval for being the real deal. He looked phenomenal today, and that wasn't just a case where, you know, he did catch an errant screen pass and took it to the house for a pick six, which was a cool moment. But it really wasn't the best play he made all day. I don't think he made an interception in the end zone later. Played the run really well, which, you know, you don't expect a freshman corner to come in to do. So outside of those two interceptions, which are great in their own right, this team needs to have guys be able to force turnovers in the secondary this season. But love what I saw from Kalen King. He looked the part, certainly lived up to the hype that we've heard about him all spring.
And this emergence this spring is, you know, got their kind of head spinning in that coach's room in terms of what they should do with this cornerback group. And we'll talk about it in a moment. You've got one guy moving over to do some offense, safety. Maybe you can contribute there and throw in John Dixon as a transfer who's gotten some love. But yeah, Kalen King, I tell you what, a few days after Franklin calls him probably the most advanced freshman they've had on campus since he got to Penn State in 2014, this kid goes out there and delivers on it, makes James Franklin look very wise with those comments. And as Franklin said after the game, what you saw today is what we've seen throughout the practice periods all spring long. Brent Pry went so far as to say the instincts of King remind him of Micah Parsons. He feels like there's a comparison to draw there. And yeah, he was playing very much under control. You know, the interceptions that he got, they weren't the hardest plays to make. I mean, he clearly was reading the situation. One was kind of a 50-50 ball thrown up by Sean Clifford. That wasn't a great throw. And then the other was a very poorly executed attempt at a screen, and picked that off and ran 25 yards for the touchdown. So if folks didn't get familiar with Kalen's name after Franklin's comments Wednesday night, you're coming out of Saturday and saying this kid's going to make an impact. And I know Joey Porter Jr. is not on the field right now and Tariq Castro Fields back. But I just don't know how we're going to get into September and not see a ton of Kalen King as long as he is healthy.
I would agree with you. I was kind of on the fence just based on what he had in front of him. And it seems like he's gotten past that. There's been a position change there. It's very good to see. I mean, this is a guy that I think physically he's a little bit further ahead than we thought he would be. We obviously loved him. This is my favorite defensive player in the class from last cycle. And, you know, we thought that maybe he could break through and do something for you, but probably would be on the back end of that. Of course, no Tariq Castro Fields today, no Joey Porter this spring, but it's one of those things where he showed that he belongs. I think my favorite play from Kalen King, not the interceptions, but there was a screen to the sideline. He fought off Parker Washington, made the stop for a yard or two gain. Thought he showed kind of a veteran presence there, which you really don't expect from a freshman quarterback. So yeah, I'm ready to give that stamp of approval for him being the real deal. I think he's got a really bright future ahead of him.
And I'll tell you what, his twin brother, Kobe, out there today playing some linebacker. He had a hit on Kevon Lee, who is not an easy guy to hit in the open field. Brought him down quickly. I thought that was one of the more violent plays we saw on the field. It's not a full live action scenario today on the field, but that was one where you know, it kind of felt game-like when Kobe met Kevon in the hole there. And we'll get to Kevon in a moment because he was pretty darn impressive today. But also on defense and also a newcomer, Sean, we go from Kalen King, the new kid at cornerback, to Arnold Ebikade, the addition at defensive end from the Temple Owls program last year. He was an all-conference player for Temple. I mean, we've heard about the explosiveness that he brings to the field that was on display today. He burned Caden Wallace on one rep and got to Sean Clifford. And I'll tell you what, if it was a live action game, the quarterback may have stayed down for a while because it would have been quite a shot. This kid, you know, he jumped off the field a bit today watching. He limped off the field at one point, which was a scary thing, but Brent Pry really excited about what they've added in him and really all three of those transfer additions on defense. But to me, he's the one guy that continues to flash when you gauge comments from players and coaches this spring and when you kind of gauge what we saw during the 2 hours today.
AK, probably one of the guys that I was looking forward to seeing the most. And really, I thought he lived up to the billing. You know, he's got probably some size still to go in terms of playing the run and things like that. I thought Penn State did some interesting stuff. I know nobody really was able to watch the game, but Penn State did some interesting stuff, standing up the defensive end, moving around a little bit. And I thought they held up well. Again, that front four kind of, I don't want to say overwhelmed the offensive line, but they pretty much dictated how things went. But Ebikade, a big part of that, got to the quarterback. You mentioned that play against Wallace. I mean, Wallace was barely out of his stance and Ebikade was by him. So not much he could have done in that situation, but he would have put a nice lick on the quarterback there. I got to say that, you know, beyond Ebikade, I felt comfortable watching those defensive ends. Nick Tarburton was a solid piece. Yeah, I know he forced a fumble. Adisa Isaac. Now, of course, there's a caveat. Adisa Isaac limped off at one point. Ebikade limped off at one point. They both came back in, but dangerously thin group. We're going to get to a little bit of that later. But it was a really good first showing for Ebikade. I'm impressed with what I saw.
Talking about the defense here early, let's focus in on the offensive standout today. And I, you know, there were a few plays made in the passing game, but the ground game, when you look at this one, it started off with a really strong run by Devin Ford on the first possession for Penn State. But as the day went on, you had the complete body of work from the running backs. It's hard not to look toward Kevon Lee as the guy who jumped out the most as the most impressive runner. He continues to be that forward momentum kind of north-south guy. I think Franklin says he's, 235-ish pounds at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. And he's moving. I mean, I don't think if he's added weight, he hasn't lost a step. And he made some, you know, he showed that ability to kind of get toward the second level and find a way to keep going, because I think that's one of the things that stands out to me with Kevon Lee. There's a couple times today where he was able to kind of, go a little bit lateral, find that lane. And the one thing we do wonder with Kevon Lee is, you know, that physicality is there. We watched him play a lot of football last year. By the end of it, where you see he can make that next stride is getting that burst beyond the second level, turning 6-7 yard gains into 15-16 yard games or breakaway runs. I don't know if he'll ever be that guy because he has that big physicality about him, but I don't know how they're going to keep him off the field. He finished strong last year. He ended up leading the team in rushing yards. You've got a lot to consider. We didn't see John Lovett, the Baylor transfer, involved today. Noah Kane wasn't ready to participate in something like this, although he's back on the practice field. Ford Holmes also involved, but it just Kevon Lee really seems like he's going to have a spot locked down in this rotation.
Well, he's a north-south guy. James Franklin talked about that after the scrimmage. Just really, this is a guy that moves forward. And I think the biggest thing that he said that I took away, he knows what he is. He's not going to go out there and be a guy that thinks he's going to break an 80-yarder because it's
no
just
dancing.
Not
yeah.
No dancing. And if he does dance, that was the interesting thing, especially for a guy that's a freshman or at the end of his first season on campus. If he does dance, if he does maybe float to the outside a little bit, he puts his foot back in the ground, gets upfield and finishes off the run. So that's the difference between a 5 and a 7 yard run. And that certainly can change the way that your offense operates from that point forward. So impressed with Kevon Lee today. Devin Ford did some nice things. I thought they threw to the backs out of the backfield a little bit. So that was cool. And of course, since we're talking MVPs, 2 touchdowns today from my guy, Tank Smith.
Yeah, Tank Smith got involved late. And you know, that running back room, we didn't see the two guys there. You just want to keep seeing more of it. I think out of every, you know, Kaziah Holmes trailed Ford and Lee in terms of, you know, making you watch him and coming away from play saying, wow, that was impressive. Ford had that nice run early, but I think time after time, Kevon Lee was getting the ball. And when that play ended, you kind of were thinking, this guy looks like Penn State, you know, someone that Penn State could be able to lean on if they needed to. And they did at times last year. A little bit of an individual focus on quote unquote MVPs for what we saw there with some of those guys. We'll take a quick break and then we're going to go position by position, empty out our notebooks a little bit coming out of Beaver Stadium. Stay with Sean and I. This is the Lions 24/7 podcast.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Walking to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching, these have been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
We got a lot to talk about on personnel, both sides of the ball in just a moment, but we do want to mention here, Sean, we did find out that Ryan Brubaker on campus today, the Penn State legacy, a guy that they are targeting on the offensive line. We're used to seeing 100 plus prospects on campus for the spring game. This wasn't a spring game. This wasn't a recruiting event. And yet it was able to get the in-state kid on campus, of course, on his own. There's no in-person recruiting right now.
Yeah, that was, I mean, anybody that you can get up, especially, I mean, it's a nice day outside. You know, it's not the warmest day in the world, but it's a nice spring day in State College. And this is a guy that will be back the first weekend of June, even though he's a legacy, even though, you know, it would be the easy pick to say that he'll end up at Penn State. I think Penn State still had some work to do. So to get him on campus, to get him comfortable, to get him around, I think it could go away in setting yourself up for that first weekend in June where you can maybe feel a little bit more comfortable with where you stand.
Sean, if you're ready to roll here again, I was looking at offense for the most part. You were looking at defense and we'll combine what we saw here, but let's start with quarterback, go back to that. A few interceptions, actually. We saw Clifford picked off in the end zone. We saw Taquan Roberson intercepted in the pick six with Kalen King. We saw a fumble on Roberson and on an exchange with Devin Ford. We saw a little bit of Christian Vayer. Nothing glaring in terms of mistakes there, which is nice for him to be doing his first time in Beaver Stadium. But I think very clearly, you know, it wasn't a lot of rhythm, I would say, in the passing game. I think a lot of the downfield targets, you didn't see a high completion percentage there. Give some credit to the defensive backfield for Penn State. But some of those shots, you didn't really see a chance. There was some underthrows. There was one that actually Vayer had Malik Mega streaking down the sideline just off the fingertips, just out of his grasp. I think that was actually pregame. I'm confusing things. Pre-practice, whatever you want to call it. But what do you take away from this? Because we saw a lot of passes thrown today, but I'm not going to really pretend that I'm walking away from this practice saying you feel a lot better about the quarterback room than when we walked into the stadium.
Yeah, still room for growth at every level, you know, at the starter level, the backup level. There's a lot to sort of digest here. Again, we don't have a stat book in front of us, so I'm not sure on completions, completion percentage or things like that. There was a lot of pressure in the sense that, you know, that last throw, that last interception that Kalen King had probably wouldn't have gotten off in the real game. Clifford just kind of threw it down the field, pushed it down the field, and King made a nice play on it. So I don't think there's a ton that you can take away from it. I think it needs to be, you know, a little bit more consistent, and that's nothing new. That's kind of what we expected and kind of what we had heard throughout the spring is kind of up and down with all three guys. With the new offense, you know, as hard as we've been on the quarterbacks, willing to give them a little bit more slack in terms of putting the stuff in and getting the guys in the right places. Some good throws today. 7-on-7 beforehand. I was impressed with what Tacon Roberson was able to do. It's interesting. I posted this in my chat this morning, talked to some people at the end of the week here, and they say, okay, Tacon Roberson, he had himself a really nice spring. He does make some wild throws. He makes some really good throws, and then he'll come back and maybe a couple times of practice, he'll just, what are you doing out there, man? Just kind of throws it somewhere. And that's what happened on that first interception by Kalen King, the pick six. They set up a screen, and we've seen this before, unfortunately, but they set up a screen, and instead of tossing it 10 rows into the bleachers there, Roberson tries to make something happen, kind of pops right into Kalen King's arms, and he takes it back the rest of the way for a touchdown. Some 2020 vibes on that one. But I thought he threw the ball well in terms of this is our first extended look at him as a passer. So there's some good things there. He looks strong. He's not the biggest guy in the world. And on the flip side, Christian Veau, taller than I remember. Granted, I haven't seen him in person since he was probably a rising junior. He looked good in uniform. A lot to learn as a true freshman quarterback. I think that's to be expected. Basically, he didn't get a senior season last year, and that's kind of the results are showing.
And I do want to make the point here. If you were keeping track of sacks, or if we were actually letting defenders chase down the quarterback, it would have been an issue. Pressure would have been an issue today pretty consistently. They brought the pressure from the interior. They brought it off the edge. There were times where plays were blown dead because the guy reached the quarterback. I mentioned Arnold Ebikade getting to Clifford earlier, but there were certainly times when passes were thrown or plays continued that would have been shut
just
down.
That one earlier. where it goes an extra second, and the guy throws it, and he probably wouldn't have had that opportunity in a real game. But that's a scrimmage for you. Everybody's in April mode right now, even the officials. So, I think all three guys showed some good things. Clifford, I thought, threw a couple nice balls. Roberson, I thought, pushed it out to the sideline really well, which, you know, that's the kind of the question is his arm strong enough? And it looks to be. So that's good. Veau, I think, threw some nice balls. Maybe just the difference between being a first year of January enrollee to a college quarterback, that split second, it makes a big difference. And, you know, maybe behind a little bit, underthrown a little bit, but I thought he looked good. In terms of just physical mechanics, I thought he looked pretty good.
Roberson, I will go back to this. I mean, you're looking at scenarios there of the pick six. And I think when that fumble happened, Brisker scooped it up. And in a game situation, you know, he picked it up and he's staring at Mike Yurcich in the back and the other quarterbacks because they're right behind the offense. It's not like a clear field. But that could have been another defensive touchdown kind of result when you have a missed exchange where the ball's flying around on the field on a fumble. So that's what you're a little worried about. And Franklin, you know, I asked the question after this practice, how comfortable is Penn State right now regarding QB2? Do they feel like they have the primary quarterback?
It was a very handsome question, by the way.
Well, you know, you really want to feel good. I mean, we have a lot of questions about Sean Clifford as QB1. I think right now we can say Sean Clifford is QB1. I don't think there's much question about that. But beyond him right now, and when you need to go to a second guy for whatever reason, what's the confidence level? I think, you know, Roberson showed, you know, there's some concern there with what happened in the turnover department, and maybe some of that is jitters. Maybe we're holding that against them when there was other execution issues. There weren't replays, so I don't know how the handoff fumble happened exactly. But, you know, that's a little concerning. And I'll say Veer didn't have any off the track moments, which I think that's a good sign. I think you go into this summer and they're going to continue to look at the transfer market and all that at quarterback. It's just, again, it's a scary situation because of the numbers there, Sean. And I don't walk away from this thinking that anyone's pushing, you know, Sean Clifford to be that starter. And I also got to remember, this is a practice. You got Mike Yurcich a few yards behind them on every play, in their ear after every play. You can see he's very active. You can see the energy in full force, as we've heard about. So it's a learning process, but I certainly think you want to get into the season and you would love to see quarterback play be sharper than we saw today. This was a practice, and I got to keep reminding myself that.
Well, you also need to remind the folks there was another fumbled exchange, which I thought my mind was playing tricks on me, but you did come through. Ooh. And tell me what happened there.
Sean Clifford took a snap under center today, folks. Headline grabbing snap that I know was going around Twitter a bit and people were reacting to it. And it was not cleanly acquired, though, by Sean Clifford. There was an issue on the exchange. And Maybe that's that when it comes to snaps under center, but something that we haven't seen in games here in Happy Valley, certainly since I've been covering the team and for a while now. We just went over a lot with the running back, so I think we can probably jump over that, over to receiver, where the story today really centered on a guy that we haven't talked about, our receiver, Marquise Wilson. Played a lot of cornerback as a freshman a couple years ago, was involved again last year. I believe he started a game or two when other guys weren't available. But today we saw him on offense. And today we also saw Taylor Stubblefield in his ear and Mike Yurcich in his ear, kind of going up to him pre-snap and going over things. Franklin telling us that this took place last week. It was something that Marquise Wilson was comfortable with. They had, since they recruited him, talked about the possibility of playing on both sides of the ball. This move was made, and he also drew a direct line to the ability to get Kalen King where he is already and the ability to bring in a transfer from South Carolina and John Dixon, who has proven that he needs to get on the field as a cornerback.
Yeah, this is something we talked about in the chat late this week in terms of moving Wilson over. Kind of a natural ball skills guy. I kind of chuckled when Franklin said what he did about Kalen King in terms of the ball just finds him, because I think the last person that he said that about was Marquise Wilson after his freshman year. Him being able to be comfortable catching the ball. And I think some of that receiver stuff will come. He was a standout on all three phases up in Connecticut during his high school days. But he's still got a lot to learn, but has shown flashes. And if you've been around Marquise Wilson, if you saw him play as a freshman, confidence not an issue there. So, and I think that's probably something that receiver, that group as a whole, needs a little bit more of, a little more brashness, a little bit more alpha mentality, if you will. So I think that Marquise Wilson would probably bring that to the table. I don't know where he's at in terms of potential production next year. But I think that, you know, it's a move worth looking into. I don't know if it's the move long-term, but it seems like there's a reason he's there, and I can see why they've kind of laid that out in terms of what they're looking for from him there.
We saw quite a bit of him get some opportunities out there, and obviously he's got a lot to learn. This is a relatively new move, as Franklin described it. But at wide receiver, you didn't see anything big from Jahan Dotson, Parker Washington. I expect they'll both deliver some wow moments this fall, and they've done so on the practice field. Today wasn't one of those practices. But we saw quite a bit of Keandre Lambert-Smith. We saw quite a bit of Cam Solomon-Brown. We actually, I believe that was the only spot that was really rotated out with the very first initial possession, Sean, where you saw what we would perceive right now as the first team offense with a couple guys missing, probably due to some injuries. But at wide receiver, you saw Lambert-Smith get that early time. You saw Solomon-Brown. And those are really the two that we have put that focus in on as far as breaking into the starting lineup. It was Lambert Smith's job to finish last year, but you continue to hear a little bit of a buzz around Solomon Brown and feeling like he was due to have a really nice season last year, but was unable to because of some physical issues.
Made a big catch right away in the scrimmage today. They went down the field to him. He made a nice adjustment on the ball, came back and got it and picked up a big game. I don't know what the yardage was on it, but it was through the air down the field. So, you know, that's kind of the situation that they're in at receiver right now. You've got sort of a 1-4 that you believe in. Then you've got some guys, Daniel George. We saw a lot of Jaden Dotton today, probably more than I expected. Malik Mega. So there's that group, that 1-4 that you feel pretty confident in. You're still trying to figure out that third starter between Solomon Brown and, you know, Lambert Smith. But at the same time, there's probably a bit of a gap there. Now, Daniel George made a really nice adjustment on a back shoulder throw, had a touchdown today from Roberson, I believe it was.
That was an excellent throw, by the way, from Roberson. Back shoulder, nice touch. Yeah. I feel like I forgot to mention that earlier, but that was one of the better throws we saw all day.
No, I might have been the best throw we saw all day, but he made a nice adjustment from it. It's just the consistency with Daniel George just has never been there. We were watching him in 7-on-7, and he got deep. I mean, I don't remember who he burned, but he got deep, and Sean Clifford threw a really, really nice deep ball that would have been a 40-yard touchdown or something like that, went right through his hands, and you can't have that. Now, to his credit, in the scrimmage, he made that touchdown grab. He made another one where he tipped the ball to himself and made a one-handed grab, but the consistency's got to be here. It can't be, you know, one step forward, two steps back with him. And that's really what's kept him off the field for the most part from breaking through over the last couple of seasons. So interested to see where he stands come August, September, but they're looking to find that fifth guy. I know that's, I don't know that Marquise Wilson is going to figure in there quite yet, but it's very much a work in progress at receiver.
You mentioned some names there, Malik Mega. I said this earlier during that 7-on-7 period. You know, he was, you watch this kid run down the field and at his size. Yeah, he's so big and he just glides down the field. Couldn't finish that play. Veer led him a little bit too far. You know, maybe he didn't extend enough. Whatever. It was a hair off, but it would have been a heck of a completion. We saw those guys connect on one possession, Sean. I think it was back-to-back completions from Veer to Mega, the Canadian connection there. But you mentioned
no shock you were all over that one.
Well, you got to get his name in the conversation. Winston Eubanks, who came into campus this year after a really strong Division II career. What are you getting out of him? He got some run today. But really, I continue to get the sense that you talk about those four guys and you put Lambert Smith and Cam Solomon Brown right there underneath Dotson and Parker Washington. We just, Marquise Wilson's in there now. But I continue to get the sense as you try to fill out what this two deep could be, keep remembering Clifford, Lonnie White, and Harrison Wallace all due to arrive at this summer on campus. And I know it's a harder when you don't enroll early, but this is a position that when you get beyond the top three, four guys, it just feels like if you come to campus ready, that's where you can make a push. And I still think we're going to see at least one true freshman be an impact guy in that room here in 2021.
I think putting that stuff aside, because we're kind of talking about the spring game today. Yeah. I think probably the biggest surprise to me, Jaden Dotton, and we've talked about Mega and his potential, and to me, he's still just all potential right now. I mean, that kid is big, fast, and still very raw. Jaden Dotton, a little bit more polished, a guy that was in there a bunch. They played him inside out, put him in motion a couple times, threw the ball across the middle, and I thought he handled himself well. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was a little bit closer to playing than Mega. Still like Mega's potential in the long term. But Dotton, I think, was probably one of my bigger surprises today.
Yeah, give him credit because he's someone quite frankly, I had no idea what to expect from Jaden Dotton, what we would see. It's
still
been a long
needs
time
to get bigger. I mean, that's yes, going to be the story with him for the next couple of years.
But the body control was good. He took advantage of his opportunities. The door is open right now to be on that two deep. There are very few, I think, roles locked in at wide receiver right now as Taylor Stubblefield assesses what he has in his first spring ball with this program. At tight end, Sean, Brenton Strange was the first guy they used, but we saw a lot of 12 personnel. We think we're going to see a lot of two tight end sets this season. That meant a lot of Theo Johnson. It meant a lot of Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren was targeted routinely, it felt like, today. No stats, but maybe 3-4 catches over the course of the day. And that's impressive what you saw out of him at tight end. Not a lot of concern with that room as we go from wondering what the heck's going to happen at wide receiver. Feels like tight end will sort itself out, whether it's one guy on the field, two guys on the field. You got the goods there, and they were certainly targeted today.
You got the goods indeed. Yes. Now, I think that's a spot where we don't have to spend too much time on, especially because it's only three people. Brenton Strange caught a touchdown. Theo Johnson was playing inside and out, flexing, in a flex tight end role. But I think my biggest takeaway, not that it was a huge takeaway, but Tyler Warren has really nice set of hands on him. And that's not something, as a high school quarterback, you're not sure how natural he is a catcher of the football. But there was a play where he took a slant or something and he picked it up off his kneecaps and made a nice gain with it. So impressed with what Tyler Warren was able to do catching the football today.
And he can move. I think all three of these tight ends can move. They get the ball in their hands. They can get upfield. These aren't like, just chunk play tight ends who are going to go down quickly.
There was
old school tight end.
There was one scenario where I think it was Warren lined up beside Malik Mega, and I think Jeffrey Davis was in front of him. And Jeffrey Davis is, he's not the tallest cornerback in the world, but he's 5'11", 6 foot, and he looked quite tiny in front of those two guys. And that was when Mega was really using his body well to get in front of Davis. But yeah, it's a group that I don't think we're going to say too much about over the next couple of months because I don't know that there's much intrigue. I mean, I think they're going to be good. They're going to be solid and really a lot of talent there, but there's only so much we can say about three tight ends.
On the offensive front, we heard from Coach Phil Troutwine about his unit this year and this week, I should say. He says he feels like he has 10 guys who could play on game day right now, but he doesn't know who the top five are going to be. And it was hard to gauge it a little bit. First off, it's hard to assess this in real time without film. Secondly, we were missing a couple key components for this offensive line. We did not see Juice Scruggs involved out there today. We did not see Dez Holmes involved out there today. Those are two potential starters in this offensive attack, and that impacts both guard positions. Without those guys involved, we saw Anthony Wiggin, who came from Lackawanna Junior College with Jaquan Brisker a couple of years ago. Haven't seen much of him in a game action at this point. And we saw Salim Wormley, who's in his third year on campus with freshman status at the other guard spot. Important reps for those guys. A key day. I don't know how long they've been getting these first team opportunities, but I will say that the defensive interior for Penn State took it to both those guys. I think Wormley took some lumps today. I would probably say the same thing about Anthony Wiggin, and in turn, give credit to John Scott's group, PJ Mustafer and company at defensive tackle.
That interior offensive line is going to be a work in progress. And I mean, without the tape, it's hard to say how Miranda held up, especially with those guys beside him getting for the most part handled. I mean, let's be honest here. And you're playing against veterans, older guys like Mustafer and Tangelo. So that's probably to be expected, but no Dez Holmes. They didn't have Dez Holmes for a big chunk of spring. Juice Scruggs was not, I guess he was dressed. He had a hoodie under his pads or something. Mm-hmm. So
no intention of clearly playing. Wasn't playing. Yeah.
So, you know, some work to do there. Eric Wilson shows up at the end of spring and you get Holmes back in there, you get Scruggs back in there, you're probably in a better spot than you feel coming out of today. But that's going to take some time to work on. Thought the tackles were fine. I thought Rashid Walker was what we expect Rashid Walker to be. And I think there's sort of a spotlight on his head this year when we expect him to be a draft pick next year. That's how he's got to play. Not sure how much you're going to take out of the scrimmage, but you said you saw him in one-on-ones and he flashed a few things there. So that's good. The younger tackles, Olufoshanu, Jimmy Crist, I thought held up pretty well. And I know we've been kind of playing up the defensive line, but for those guys that are redshirt freshmen, or I guess they're second year freshmen or whatever, I thought they held up pretty well. Still a little bit to go in terms of physical development for both of those guys, but and I don't know that they're ready to be, you know, second team fill out the depth chart guys. Maybe Fashanu might have a step up on Chris there, but I thought they both played well.
Fashanu was the next guy in at right tackle after Caden Wallace. By the way, Bryce Effner was the next guy in at left tackle behind Rashid Walker. Effner's been mentioned recently as Wednesday night by James Franklin as a guy they feel could make an impact at all three positions on the offensive front. When I look at this, though, Sean, we saw some of these younger players, Nick Dawkins getting work inside, Golden Israel Achumba getting work inside. Blake Zillar is kind of the one walk-on component here who has impressed since he got to campus, a big kid who could really move coming out of high school. Penn State swiped him away from Rutgers late, and they've kind of tucked him away. He was the next center in today. Now, we've got to account no Juice Scruggs on the field. We think Effner can contribute at center apparently as well. But I just wanted to also note that Blake Zillar took a lot of reps at center behind Mike Miranda.
Yeah, and I would expect Effner to factor into that center race at some point, whether that's just one of those things where you feel more comfortable with the older guy in there, you know, as we've seen at different positions, and you can slide maybe Miranda to guard or something like that. I think that's a possibility here. But they've got some work to do on that interior offensive line. The good news is they were missing two guys they expect to contribute, and a third is set to arrive at the end of May as a grad transfer in Eric Wilson. So I don't think it's time to hit the panic button from that aspect, but it is worth noting there is room for improvement there. On the other side of the ball, that defensive line, as we said, kind of dictated things, which it's a spring scrimmage. That's usually how it happens. Hakeem Beeman, very active. Got the start today beside PJ Mustafer, and he really gave those guards all they could handle and more. So he was pretty fantastic today. I like what I saw from Derek Tangelo. I wanted to mention this earlier when we were talking about Ebikete. Tangelo is not going to be a guy that fills up the stat sheet or anything like that. But if you just kept looking at the pile, he was always at the bottom of it. So that's a good sign. If he can eat up blockers and maybe they can have some versatility in there with Beeman, with Mustafer, Devon Ellis played quite a bit today. So if they can get that and sort of sand down the finer points of the defensive tackle rotation, I think that can be a good group.
I thought PJ Mustafer flashed today a little bit. He had Salim Wormley back on his heels on a couple of occasions getting into the backfield. Brent Pry's excited about the stature of PJ Mustafer coming into this year, 20 pounds heavier about than last year without sacrificing too much athleticism. And it just feels like he's a guy that Pry says no one is more motivated on this roster right now than PJ Mustafer. We've seen him put that attention on himself, mentioned that earlier this week on the podcast. But I thought that translated well into our first look at PJ of 2021. And I know you have a note down here also at defensive tackle. Some guy who just was out there looking like he was bench pressing offensive guards at time was Fatorma Mulba, who we also have heard some good feedback from John Scott Jr. on the defensive front.
He's not the swiftest guy on his feet, but he is strong. You put him in that box and he can take on some guys. Saw him take on a couple of double teams today, and probably one of those guys that more so opens things up for those around him more than himself. But you need that kind of guy in the interior defensive line.
By the way, a guy who looked the part and has, you know, had some development to do, Rodney McGraw stepped on the field and does not look like a guy who got to a college campus 3 months ago, Sean. I had to double check that was his number.
Physically, and yet, and especially when you compare him to Bryce Mostello, who still looks, I'm not sure what his weight is right now, but he still looks pretty skinny, pretty lanky. But McGraw got out there. I think he looked as raw as I thought he would. I don't, you know, it's one of those things. I don't think he's close to being a polished player, but in terms of stature, he went out there and you just kind of looked and who's number 90? I mean, who is that guy? So it's pretty cool in terms of seeing him for the first time. One guy I actually didn't write down on the rundown, and I completely forgot because I wanted to mention him earlier, Zariah Fisher at defensive end. I thought looked really good, especially in the early stages of this scrimmage. Still some work to do in terms of the fundamentals of the position. Of course, he just moved over from linebacker in the offseason, made a couple of tackles for losses. I think he might have been involved on a sack or two. Thought he looked really good at defensive end.
Yeah, I did not expect to see his name called and didn't expect to be looking toward his number on the roster sheet as much as I did. And Akeem Beamon, you know, he's a guy who continues to, you wonder what he's going to set up for what Brent Pry and John Scott can do defensively because of the versatility there, kind of being that swing defensive lineman, a guy who looked the part today, like he is ready to be a force on the defensive front. And I'll also bring it back to Nick Tarburton. We got to seriously talk about this guy playing a lot of football. It's been a nice story, and he's got to bridge that gap between now and then when we get into Big Ten play in September. But come away today thinking they plan on using him quite a bit.
Yes, it was good to see him out there. Just in terms of playing, just at the simplest form, being able to play, being able to hold up in there. And he made some good plays. I mean, he got the start over Ebikete, which was a little bit surprising, but at the same time, when he went out there and he was productive. So that's certainly something, like I said, you can take from those top three guys. I think there's a little bit of a gap between Tarburton, Ebikete, and Adisa Isaac, and then the next step to Smith Filbert, who filled in pretty nicely as well. Zariah Fisher's in there as well. So I think there's a gap between those first three and then the next group is kind of how we saw receivers shaping up. You know, you've got your starters, you got your third guy, and then there's a little bit of a gap.
We got a couple more spots to get to on defense. Some final thoughts. First, a word from former Penn State All-American linebacker Brandon Short.
I'm Brandon Short, All-American linebacker, current member of Penn State's board, and two-time captain of your Nittany Lions. I'm running for re-election to Penn State's board. I come from a tough background, and a Penn State education changed my life. I had an NFL career, earned an MBA from Columbia, and I'm now in finance. Penn Staters have a lot of pride in athletics. There are wide-ranging benefits from success in athletics, increasing academic standards, supporting 850 student athletes, and boosting the local economy. The current athletic budget is self-funding and is independent from the university, so investments have no impact on tuition or employee salaries. Yet, over the past decade, Michigan and Ohio State have outspent Penn State by $246 million and $390 million respectively. Some candidates in this election want to de-emphasize athletics, making this gap wider. We must invest not for more touchdowns, but to benefit the local economy and enhance the entire university. If you agree, vote for Brandon Short, Steve Wagman, and Alvin DeLevy so together we can invest in Penn State's future.
To vote, go to the link in the podcast show notes now. Thank you.
And line from an All-American linebacker to the current group of Penn State linebackers. Brandon Smith, a guy who was really all over the place today. Sean, I think Curtis Jacobs saw him flash into the backfield at one point. Just coming out of this practice, remembering it's one of only 12 they've had, Pry feeling like they have upgraded at Sam and Will linebacker because of the moves that have been made this week. You know, he feels like they're going to get they're going to be able to maximize those spots more here in 2021 because of what those guys have brought to the table. We saw Ellis Brooks involved out there today, not Jesse Lucchetta, who has been sidelined for a bit. But overall, thoughts on what you've seen from linebacker?
You know, I thought the starters played pretty well in terms of Ellis Brooks was in there on a few plays. He looks a little bit better than he did last season. Now, I know the live bullets have not started flying, and that's very much a position that we'll sit back and kind of wait on our evaluation until the fall. But I thought he did some nice things. Brandon Smith, nice to see him running around like a crazy person, as he does. And then Curtis Jacobs was back there in coverage playing that field linebacker spot. I think it was good. Very solid all around. And I think that probably has something to do with the guys in front of him. By the way, I wanted to slip one more mention on the defensive line. I thought Amin Vanover played well today playing defensive end, but back to linebacker, Charlie Catcher was back out there today, which we didn't expect to see him at, you know, when spring ball opened. So that's good just to get back a little bit of that depth. Now I don't think he played in the scrimmage, but he was out there in the 7-on-7. So, you know, a positive step back for Catcher. The guy that really caught my eye, on the linebacker side of things, Tyler Elsden got a ton of reps today. I mean, he's got a ton of reps today. He's gotten a ton of reps in the spring. I don't know that he's starter level just yet, but he did some nice things. What I was impressed with just watching him line people up and get people in front of him in the right positions. You know, it takes a little bit of knowledge to play that spot. And I thought he did a good job, especially for a guy who's only been on campus for a little over a year. So I think that's probably my main takeaway. I think Kobe King did some nice things, flash a little bit, but I think I did notice a difference, a little bit of a gap between Tyler Elsden and Kobe King.
It was a good day for Elsden from, you know, just getting a chance to see where he is at right now at 6'2", 230 pounds, year two on campus. And we've talked about it on the past here on the podcast. The numbers right now are thin at linebacker. You go into that too deep, you have concerns. This is a spot where you want to see competition take place throughout the summer and get your best guys out there. And maybe Elsden has his hat in the ring there. You'd like to see Charlie Catcher get a chance to do just that as well and get where he needs to be physically. But I think if Elsden can be a presence for them at linebacker, he's got to be. I mean, he's got to be. And from what we saw today, you feel a little bit better about that. But just a brief glimpse into a scrimmage.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you can take away. I mean, there's a lot of walk-on linebackers out there. Nothing wrong with that, but that's what we saw a lot of today. So Elsden's my big takeaway among the linebackers, even though we did see quite a bit of the first group.
Defensive back, Sean, there was some missing guys out there. Joey Porter Jr. is not involved there. Castro Fields, we saw some in special teams coverage, not out there. Jair Brown, that was probably the most notable absence in terms of a guy we were really hoping to see. We spoke with him this week, battling for the starting job. That opened the door for Jonathan Sutherland to handle the initial first team duties. But I think I came out of today feeling like Tyler Rudolph, and from what I heard from Brent Pry after this too, Tyler Rudolph has made his case certainly as a two deep guy, and Pry was careful to mention him as being involved in this competition.
I thought Rudolph and Enzo Jennings, and we probably shouldn't do this, but we lump them together so often, same kind of long athlete back there and, you know, a four-star pedigree and such, but I thought they both showed some flashes today. And they did so in the run game, which is kind of it wasn't their forte coming into their college career. So I like what I saw there. I think Rudolph has a chance to push. Really unfortunate not to see Jair Brown today. That was one of the things that I was looking forward to the most, and he was not out there. James Franklin said for health reasons. So Sutherland got the start. We saw quite a bit of the young guys out there. Cornerback wise, I think they all played fairly well, probably with the exception of Daquan Hardy. They went right at Daquan Hardy a couple times.
They were picking on him a little bit, weren't they?
Yeah, flat out picking on him. That's if you're going to say concerning, that's probably a little bit concerning when you're talking about Hardy, especially when you put him up against. What else was out there at corner? Really liked, of course, Kalen King, whom we already spoke about. And Johnny Dixon looked like he could really fit in there, probably going to fit in as the nickelback as well. So corners, I thought, you know, it's a good good scrimmage for them. Keaton Ellis got caught red-handed one time. I think he bit on a screen at the line of scrimmage, and Brenton Strange got behind him. Nice little double move fake there, and it did not end up well for Mr. Ellis. But other than that, I thought the group played fairly well. So not really a ton that you can take away from the secondary, but some of those younger guys, and I know people have been sort of expecting a little bit more out of Rudolph and a little bit more out of Jennings based on their pedigree, but I think they're on schedule. I think they're coming along at the rate in which they should be expected to come along.
And it sounds like there's still a little bit of a separation there, because Pry said afterward, feels like they have four safeties that they can go win games with right now. He said in the past, it's been three. In scarier moments, there's been two safeties they felt that way about. But, you know, he lumped in Tyler Rudolph with that group that would also feature Brisker, Jonathan Sutherland, and Jair Brown. But Enzo Jennings, I thought, you know, he popped up today in a way that you were hoping to see, a guy who came in with some really solid accolades in his own right. And I still do wonder if that cornerback room, which is now contributing to the wide receiver room in the form of Marquise Wilson, does that cornerback room have another gift to give and maybe give that one over to the safety room?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a possibility to look at, probably, you know, leaning on Keaton Ellis. This is not a new speculation by us or anything like that, because we talked about that coming into the spring, but I think it makes sense from the defensive standpoint. I think you've got probably, you know, you feel good about four guys and you'd like to see Jennings come along. I think it's a very big summer ahead for Enzo Jennings and Tyler Rudolph, and see if they can sort of get in there and mix it up. And, you know, to me, it's kind of, you got that gap between the first three guys and then the next two. It's another position that you've got a gap like that. So they should hope to close the gap this summer.
I feel like, Sean, a lot of what we saw today is going to be influenced by the fact that I just felt like the defensive front in a lot of ways consistently took it to the offensive front, not across the board. I think the tackle play was pretty strong. And like you said, it's really hard to gauge how Miranda handled himself watching in live time with two guys that we aren't really expecting to be starters at the guard position here in 2021. But, you know, that was a pretty influential aspect of everything we saw today, because what happens up front, the line of scrimmage, is going to determine a lot of what you're capable of doing.
Yeah, and you don't want to – I mean, you want to feel good about the defensive line, but you don't want to take too much away from it in that aspect. And on the flip side, you know, I think there's help on the way for that interior offensive line, so I think they'll be okay. James Franklin seemed pleased with their progress when we talked to him afterward. It's a spot, probably my main takeaway. You'd like to see a little bit more explosive ability, especially in the outside. You know, Dotson was phenomenal last year. Washington is very talented kid as well. You see a guy that can push the ball down the field and maybe get some things rolling. You know, just I don't know, and it's probably unfair to say this, but I don't know that there's that Hamler that can bust an 80 yarder against Ohio State, you know. And that's not really it's not the worst criticism in the world, because not many people can do that, but I'd like to see a little bit more explosion, a little bit more playmaking ability at wide receiver. We'll see if Marquise Wilson can do that. It's hard to say where he fits in now, but from the offensive side of the ball, I think that's probably my main takeaway, is you'd like to see a little bit more explosion there.
You mentioned Hamler. He was on the field today watching this thing. So was Zetor Gross-Matos, Miles Sanders, Marcus Allen was there. So a little bit of a feel of a spring game, but clearly not what the blue-white game would be all about. And by the way, this was a curveball to us, Sean. Kind of thought we were wrapping up spring ball this week. I mean, that's what we've been discussing on the podcast for a while. Turns out this was practice number 12, not number 15. And this kind of tells you, you know, we're informed as things go sometimes. And there's another week of spring practice ahead, and it's going to culminate next Friday night, apparently, at Beaver Stadium, with senior students being brought into the stadium. I have no idea if we're going to get in there again. Zero idea about that. But this was not the end of spring camp. So they got three more practices in their back pocket. I don't know how it worked out this way, why it worked out this way, but they're going beyond the 5-week mark.
And I hope we do get back in there. This was fun today. I mean, it was absolutely cool. It was cool to watch. And like I mentioned, just hearing some crowd behind it just kind of changes the game completely for me in terms of
the band. The band was big for me. The band back in the stadium, that felt like a little college football was back in the air, man.
And Wagon Wheel was there too, so that's also notable. But no, it was a really cool experience. I'm glad they let us in and got us the access that they did. It's always appreciated this time of year. And hopefully we can do it again next week.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. If we do, we'll talk about it again here on the podcast. We just threw a ton your way. Sean, anything else? I know we'll probably remember some things we forgot to mention here, get some more context for when we listen through some of these conversations post-game. Anything else to add before we wrap it up?
No, this was my 25-minute wrap-up, and we're clearly over 50 minutes by now, so I am good on that aspect. Thank you.
Perfect. I am too. Thank you to our listeners. Nice to be back to you on a Saturday from this post-game. Oh, geez, I said it. Post-practice episode here at the Lions 24/7 podcast. We'll catch up with you next week with a couple more episodes. Tyler Donahue, Sean Fitz. Thanks as always for listening.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Taco makes snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.